Hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas. Thank you for joining me today to reflect on the incarnation of Christ and all the mystery contained therein. This year's Christmas Gospel is the prologue to the Gospel of John. It is the last Gospel to have been written and the most Christologically sophisticated. As I tell my students, it demonstrates the conclusion that the earliest Christians were starting to come to, namely, that Jesus was not only special from the moment he began his ministry, as we see in the Gospel of Mark, or from the moment of his conception and birth, as we see in Matthew and Luke, but from the beginning of time itself. In the beginning, Jesus is the eternal God, the author of John is trying to tell us. Interestingly, though, he's also a baby. He's a powerful king. He's the savior of the world, but he's also a vulnerable newborn. God is both at once. God can contain vulnerability and power. As the gospel reminds us, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. All of today's readings point to the conundrum that is the incarnation. The irrationality of it. The Word is also flesh. Eternity enters history in the form of a newborn child, humanity at its most fragile. In the first reading, the ruined city of Jerusalem is instructed to sing out for joy. In the epistle, the crucified Jesus is the heir to God's eternal kingdom. I can think of a lot of theological words for this. The dialectic of salvation, the paschal mystery, the scandal of the incarnation or the cross. But fundamentally, it doesn't make sense. I mean, how? How can someone who comes after John, who follows, also lead or take precedence over him? How can a ruined city shout for joy? How can a word also have a body? Though it seems irrational, if we reflect on it, we see examples of this same kind of irrationality throughout our lives, maybe especially now at the holidays. After all, maybe you've noticed this, why would there be so many melancholy Christmas songs if the holidays were only about joy and cheer? What would Joni Mitchell have done with River? What would we do without Joni Mitchell's River? How could Judy Garland try to have herself a merry little Christmas if she wasn't deep in despair, living in the hopes that next year all our troubles would be miles away? Just over a week ago, I watched a viral video of the funeral of Irish musician Shane McGowan. It took place in a Catholic church in Tipperary in Ireland. I never listened much to McGowan's band, the Pogues, and to be honest, I've never been a huge fan of Irish music. I have different preferences. Nevertheless, as a Catholic, I'm a sucker for a funeral liturgy. And this one absolutely blew me away. After communion, a huge group of musicians, at least 8 men playing traditional instruments and quite a few vocalists, were at the front of the church behind the casket, singing what can only be described as a raucous rendition of one of McGowan's most famous tunes, Fairy Tale of New York. Now, Fairy Tale of New York is not something you would hear at church. It is not a liturgically appropriate song. It begins in the drunk tank on Christmas Eve. The lyrics are horridly irreverent, like the man probably that they were memorializing that evening. But none of that was what got me. About 3/4 of the way through the song, the camera pans to the nave of the church. And there's a woman jumping a pew, jumping, throwing her leg over a pew to get to the aisle, to join several couples who are joyously dancing along to the music, right in front of the simple wicker casket covered in flowers. I still get emotional just thinking about it. The beauty of a moment of such profound mourning spilling over into music and big enough to contain all the emotions in that church, including and maybe especially joy. That the congregation, filled with famous people and rich people and normal everyday people, made room for ebullience in that moment, and that the liturgy was capable of holding it. There's a lesson here for us to imitate. In the incarnation, God too makes room. God is determined to make room. Room for light in the darkness. Room for joy in our sadness. Room for triumph in our defeats. Room for peace in our broken, war-torn world. God is determined to make space among the ruins for celebration, to make possible within our vulnerability a sense of safety. God is determined to make room in the darkness that surrounds us for an inextinguishable light. How are we being called to make room in our own lives? Room for forgiveness, either of ourselves or of others. Room for peace amid our anxious racing thoughts. Room for justice for those most excluded or most forgotten among us. Are we determined, like God, to make room for good in this world filled with suffering? Are we willing to hop a pew and dance in the aisle about it? Here's hoping that the bravery of Mary and the joyous audacity of that funeral dancer inspires us to make some room this Christmas.